This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Over on alternet.org, the top story is titled, "The NFL's Ongoing Kaepernick Controversy Shows Much of White America is Still in Slave Patrol Mode." There's a long history of whites trashing blacks when they protest the systems whites have put in place to keep them down. I wrote that article. It just went up about an hour ago, just FYI. Dr. Crystal Fleming is writing not just about this, but also the whole Serena Williams thing, and how to be less stupid about race and gender, basically. She's the Associate Professor of Sociology and Africana Studies and Associate Faculty at the Department of Women's Gender and Sexuality Studies at SUNY Stony Brook, and the author of a forthcoming book. It's coming out this week or next week, How to Be Less Stupid About Race, on Racism, White Supremacy, and the Racial Divide. Dr. Fleming, welcome to our program.
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much for having me.
So glad to have you with us. In your book, chapter two is titled "Listen to Black Women." Is there a tie in there to Serena? I'm sorry, I haven't had an opportunity yet to read your book. We just got a copy of it this morning.
Yeah, well, I can't say that I prophetically predicted what would happen in the women's final this past weekend. I definitely do mention Serena Williams briefly in the book because I'm just a huge fan. I did happen to actually be at Arthur Ashe this past Saturday, so I was present when the debacle unfolded, and it's something that my followers on Twitter know I've been writing about ever since, and I have an op-ed that will come out, you know, shortly. But yeah, I mean, you know, I think so much of what unfolded Saturday afternoon just really illustrated, you know, the intersections of racism and sexism in the lives of black women, right? And in this case, an extremely high-profile black woman. But yeah, there's a lot to unpack there.
How do we, you know, your book, the chapters, The Origins of Racial Stupidity, An Idiot's Guide to Critical Race Theory, on Racial Stupidity in the Obama Era, I'm so looking forward to reading all this. How do, in particular, white people learn through this process? I'll just tell you a real quick story of my own, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. I had this was maybe 3 or 4 months ago, a black caller who made a really, really brilliant point. And I said, oh, that was great. That was so articulate. And as soon as I got off that call, I thought, oh my God, I remembered the whole Joe Biden controversy. And I thought, you know, is that a word I normally use? Or did my own racial prejudices just pop to the surface? And so over the next 3 or 4 days, whenever a white caller would make, or somebody who sounded like a white caller, would make a really good point, I would go out of my way to say, that was really articulate, just to see how it felt coming off my tongue. And yeah. I was telling Nate this a couple weeks ago. It became very, very clear to me that that's not a word that I typically use when I'm talking to white people. And so, boom, Tom gets a lesson. Speak to that and just generally how white people can help wake up to these issues.
I mean, I think that's a great example that you just shared, right? Because one of the things I emphasize in the book is that it's impossible to move forward and make progress on these issues without a change in consciousness. And that requires, you know, a willingness to look at our own behavior. And I include black folks and people of color amongst those who also need to look at our own behavior, simply because of how internalized oppression can work and how we're all exposed to white supremacy simply by virtue of growing up and being socialized in a systemically racist and white supremacist society. So I think, you know, your example of sort of catching yourself and realizing maybe, you know, in retrospect, right, oh, wow, I use this word in a way that, you know, maybe might be linked to prejudice, right, even though you wouldn't want to. So
right.
There's this way in which also, you know, when we become aware of our socialization, we realize that we perpetuate behaviors against our own will, right? And so I think, you know, there's Jane Elliott. I think you're probably familiar with this anti-racist educator. She's mm-hmm. In her 80s now, I think, and she's the teacher who, right after the assassination of Martin Luther King, did this social experiment in her class, right, where she divided the class into brown-eyed versus blue-eyed kids and then, you know, tried to teach them about how stigma and racism and prejudice work. And one of the things she always says is that, you know, even after decades of doing this work, you know, being both an anti-racist educator and, you know, working on her own implication in the system, you know, she is, the work is still ongoing. Like, it doesn't stop, right?
So, sure.
What can white people do? I mean, I think at the very least, you know, becoming more aware, particularly of what black folks and indigenous people and people of color live through and experience, and really amplifying and listening to the knowledge, right, that black folks and people of color have about the way the system works. But I also talk about in the book that, you know, consciousness raising is not enough, because we're also in this period where, you know, sort of the politics of wokeness, right? Like, I'm so woke because, you know, I can say that racism exists, right? Which is a very, right, you know, like, low level, you know.
It's a low threshold, position. Yeah.
Right. But a lot of people, you know, want cookies for these very low level insights. And the reality is, consciousness is not enough. We also have to, you know, be very clear about the need to shift resources. Right. So shifting resources, certainly around issues of racism and how people of color and black folks have been and still are systemically denied, whether we're talking about economic, political, social resources, but also, you know, linking that fight to the fight to shift resources to the poor, to working people, to exploited and marginalized folks more broadly. And that's also something I talk about in the book, right, which, you know, these are the connections, I know, Tom, that you also make, that one of the things that Martin Luther King talked about that gets erased is that he connected the fight against racism to the fight against poverty and capitalist exploitation and the fight against militarism, yep, and endless war.
Yeah, right? And so, in fact, that was those are major themes and throughout his life, but particularly in the last few years of his life. We have an administration right now, the Trump administration, that where Betsy DeVos in education is trying to radically cut funds for education, where we have a Supreme Court that asserted in the case where the Voting Rights Act was being litigated that even though this legislation passed the Congress back in the early 2000s by a 98-0 vote, we don't need it anymore because there's no more racial discrimination in America, essentially. It seems that so much of this is going backwards. And I still occasionally get a call from, you know, white people typically listening in red states who obviously watch a lot of Fox News going, what are these people still complaining? You know, that kind mm-hmm. of stuff. Yeah. How do we message this, and how do we wake up those people who aren't even interested in being woke?
You know, Tom, that's a really, you know, difficult question because, I have a couple of responses. On the one hand, you know, I'd say that there are, you know, there's a contingent of folks in our society that have, I mean, there is no level of evidence that will convince them. This is actually something that, you know, the scholar W.B. Du Bois had to reckon with in his own life. Du Bois thought for quite a long time that if he just had enough research to show that African Americans were being oppressed and discriminated against, right, even after the end of the abolition of slavery, he thought that if you had enough evidence that would be enough, right, to change our society for the better. And at a certain point, he realized that was simply not true. It was an illusion that there are people in our society. You can show them endless studies. You can show them evidence of disparities. It doesn't matter. They are committed both rationally, because it's in their self-interest, and also emotionally to the system of white supremacy. And there's no evidence that you can show them that will say, hey, you know what, I'm wrong about this.
Yeah, so Donald Trump is still saying the Central Park Five should be put to death.
I mean, exactly.
After the guy confessed to the crime and they were acquitted by all the evidence.
You have
forgive my interrupting, but we just have a minute or so left here.
Yeah, yeah.
Tucker Carlson on Fox News, I believe it was last night, came out and said, how precisely is diversity our strength? He says, since you made this our new national motto, please be specific as you explain it. Well, I thought our old national motto was E Pluribus Unum, out of many one. But nonetheless, This is Fox News' position. Diversity is a weakness?
Yeah. I mean, it's shocking, but time to go back to something that you said. It's shocking and it's not shocking. But to go back to something you said earlier, it seems like we're going backwards in some very specific ways. This pattern of, some steps forward, some steps back, it's also, as I know you and many of your callers know, it's quintessentially American, right? Some people have called this sort of the next Reconstruction, because we saw this. We saw this, in the aftermath of the Civil War. There was great hope, right, for what it meant to see the abolition of slavery. But what we saw was the rise and retrenchment of white supremacy. We saw the rise and establishment of Jim Crow, right? We saw all of these instances in our history where advances in civil rights and human rights have been met with resistance from those who think that diversity is a bad thing, who think that white supremacy and male supremacy and all of this are actually great things. And we have to reckon with the fact that these folks aren't going away. There's an intergenerational transmission of these values, these really terrible values that, would say that, white men should rule everything and we should rally behind that, and people of color and women shouldn't. We have to admit that is a core part of this country's history and ongoing legacy.
Yeah, and they also extend it to people who are not basically cisgendered.
Of course.
So this whole thing, this is quite remarkable. Dr. Crystal Fleming is the Associate Professor of Sociology and Africana Studies and Associate Faculty Department of Women's Gender and Sexuality Studies at SUNY Stony Brook. Her new book coming out, How to Be Less Stupid About Race, on racism, white supremacy, and the racial divide. I am really looking forward to reading this book. You can tweet her at Always Heal the Self and Fleming PhD. Dr. Fleming, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Great talking with you. And her website, crystalfleming.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be right back with more of the news of the day and your calls right after this. And welcome back. Jeff in Portland, Oregon, listening on X-Ray FM. Hey, Jeff, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, thanks so much for taking my call. Great show as usual, and shout out to all your excellent guests today.
Thank you.
And as you often say, Tom, we can walk and chew gum at the same time. And in my humble opinion, it's crucial we do that over the next 2 months in terms of A, rejecting Kavanaugh, and B, getting out the vote in November.
Yep.
And I have a question for you about Kavanaugh, but first I'd like to comment on the midterms. John Kerry was on one of the morning shows yesterday, may have been Fareed Zakaria, I'm not sure. But besides talking about how woeful our infrastructure is compared to countries like China, which he mentioned they have 300-mile-an-hour passenger trains now, Kerry also pointed out that elections are more about the people that don't vote as opposed to the ones that do. And Tom, that's why it's nice to see President Obama out there finally pushing Medicare for All. According to Dr. Margaret Flowers, 85% of Democrats and 52% of Republicans support Medicare for All. So, whether it's older white leaders like Senator Sanders and Warren, or younger people of color leaders like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, Stacey Abrams, or Andrew Gillum, we need to throw all our weight behind the people, the candidates, and the leaders that are going to energize and activate the Democratic base.
Absolutely agree with that. Absolutely agree.
Yeah, the ones that embrace Medicare for All, living wages, union rights, fair trade, et cetera, et cetera. So regarding Kavanaugh, Tom, thanks for all your efforts to warn us about this guy. I haven't read Lisa Graves' article yet, but I do recommend to your listeners the David Brock piece you posted on your Twitter.
Yeah, that was absolutely breathtaking. I retweeted that. That was shocking what David Brock had to say. He used to hang out with Kavanaugh, and they did some really skeezy stuff.
Yeah, I mean, this is Brock himself, a Republican, talking about what a smear merchant and scummy operative, like along the lines of Roger Stone, that this Kavanaugh has been. And so my question to you, Tom, is besides everyone going all out to persuade the senators on the fence that you've mentioned today, what do you think about the idea of trying to get some prominent Democrats to say, hey, wait, for for Merrick Garland, Mitch McTurtle made us wait a whole year for the 2016 elections to take place. We're asking for just 2 months for these midterm elections. You wanted the people to decide on Garland. We want the people to decide on Kavanaugh. What do you think about that kind of strategy, Tom?
I would completely agree with it, except it won't work because, you know, Chuck Schumer doesn't run the Senate any longer. It's now run by Mitch McConnell, Mitch McTurtle. And, you know, he's going to push this thing through. He insists that by October 1st, when the Supreme Court meets for their new session, I believe it's October 1st, or in any case, this fall when the Supreme Court is back together, that Brett Kavanaugh is going to be on the court. And this is just, I mean, you know, along with his buddy John Roberts, the both of them worked on the Bush v. Gore lawsuit back in 2000 on behalf of George W. Bush to get the Supreme Court to overturn the election in Florida or block the recount of the election in Florida. So I don't know how to do that, Jeff, but I think messaging that is a really good and important thing, and you said it very well. Jeff, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks so much for listening to this X-Ray FM here in Portland, Oregon. We'll be back. It's 22 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say, no, I don't think so. Back in just a second. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and Sue in Louisiana, in Ball, Louisiana. Hey, Sue, what's on your mind today? Thanks for listening to us on SiriusXM.
Hello?
Sue? Hey, Sue, you're on the air.
Oh, okay. Well, I was listening to the radio. I didn't hear myself come on. I am a small blue dot in a huge red state of Louisiana. And I post things on Facebook occasionally, and I post something about diversity on Facebook. And a friend, we have civil conversations that we have completely different political views. And I posted something about diversity, and he informed me that the word diversity was code for white genocide.
Well, that's something that a neo-Nazi would say.
Exactly.
That's breathtaking.
It did shock me.
Yeah.
It shocked me.
Yeah.
Yeah, because diversity was just code for, you know, getting rid of the white race.
Well, and when did the color of our skin become the most important thing? I mean, I say that rhetorically because obviously it's
important.
Yeah, it's been the case since the founding of the Republic, actually, you know, tragically.
Right.
But there is strength in diversity. That, you know, E Pluribus Unum is our national motto. I think it probably referred to national origin long before it did to racial diversity. But you know, out of one, many. This is us. I mean, this is the United States of America. And if, you know, if there's more, if I end up living in, or my children or grandchildren end up living in a majority minority country, and, you know, obviously that's going to happen in the near future. I don't see why that changes things as long as everybody is embracing the same ethos, the same ideals of the Enlightenment that made the United States. You know, that
what do we all want? We all just want to live our lives and be happy and provide for our children, and we all have that in common.
Yes. And that's what we need to be emphasizing, and that's what we need to be pointing out. Sue, thanks for sharing that story with us. That's pretty shocking, but not absolutely surprising. Colin in Kirkland, Washington. Hey, Colin, you got a minute to the break here. What's up?
Oh, yes, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to point out how dangerous Kavanaugh's view on the notion of a president not being subject to criminal indictments or criminal investigations. If this becomes the legal precedent of the country, how long until that gets transferred onto other elected or even appointed bureaucrats within government who are not subject to term limits?
Yeah, it's a defiance of the rule of law. And had the Supreme Court taken Kavanaugh's position in 74, I guess it was, or late 73, Richard Nixon would have served out his term.
Yeah. Wow.
And I mean, you know, that's pretty bizarre stuff. So
It just scares me to think that, in the future, if this becomes precedent, it scares me to think that, state governors, city mayors.
Yeah. Well, it also, Colin, what they're doing is saying we can pick and choose who we're going to prosecute. And that's dangerous, too. That's a repudiation of the rule of law. Thank you, Colin, for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
We'll be back with your calls right after this. It's 27 and a half minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And let's pick up your phone calls here today. Michael in Bronx, New York. Hey, Michael, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. That was a great interview you gave with the doctor regarding sports and Serena Williams. Mm-hmm. And I had to put my two cents in. And the bogus calls in that tennis match, in my view, was because of just days before she endorsed her support by way of Twitter of the new Nike commercials with Colin Kaepernick. Now, as we all know, that Mr. Trump, or can I say Mr. 45, has interjected himself numerous times with the kneeling during the national anthem and saying that you're disrespecting the flag, disrespecting the military, disrespecting the anthem and the nation, and those that do so must be penalized. Those that support those who take the knee must be penalized as well. So when I look back at the NFL games with the teams that have been pretty much robbed, and how should I say this, that they receive bogus calls and false accusations from officials, and they're the same teams that have taken the knee, it kind of makes you wonder, how far has Trump has gone to really turn this into a dictatorship? I mean, people may say that, it's just a game. They not make much of a big deal because it's just a game. It's more than just a game. This takes away the spirit of equal opportunity and fairness. And just because you stand up for what you know it's right, you're not going to be penalized in so many different ways because you're taking that stand, even if it means robbing you of, let's say, a championship status that you worked so hard for.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's why I spent the weekend writing this op-ed piece for Alternet that just went up today. My original title for it was "The Slave Patrol Comes for Kaepernick," and I talk about how the one thing that's not in the article that I thought about this morning, I should have added it in, is Barbecue Barbie. This epidemic of white people calling the police on black people because they're having, family picnics, or because they're trying to get into their own houses, or trying to get into their own cars, or, jumping into a swimming pool. Those are the more microaggression types, but the focus of the article that I wrote is, black people being murdered by white cops who are completely unaccountable. And when Colin Kaepernick stands up and says, or takes a knee, which is prayerful, he did it as a way of showing respect for the flag and the national anthem, by the way, because he used to be just sitting on the bench. When he took that knee,
counseled by a military veteran on that, too.
Yeah, I quote the guy in the article. His name is Nate Boyer. And in fact, what Nate Boyer said, this is what he said about his conversation with Kaepernick. He said, "Soldiers take a knee in front of a fallen brother's grave, to show respect. When you're on patrol, we go into a security halt, we take a knee and we pull security. People take a knee to pray. So for me, it was common ground, at least, to start from." And Kaepernick loved that and said, "Yeah, spot on. This is what I'm going to do." And Trump, of course, is lying about it. Michael, thank you for the call. Trump and Pence, it's because he hates the flag. Come on, that's a load of BS. Rudy in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Rudy, what's on your mind? Thanks for listening to SiriusXM.
Hey, Tom, how you doing, man?
Good. What's on your mind?
I would like to think that I have a lot of, white people in my life. But, I come to understand that white America has a blind spot. And I can't quite put my finger on it because I'm not a white person. But there is a blind spot that white America have against minorities other than, people other than themselves. And the word that you use is poison, like the Tucker Carlson, when these guys push that diversity is something that's not productive to society.
Right.
Tom, this, you know, I often call you and tell the audience that white America is at a crossroads. And there is at the point where the good white people or educated white people are going to have to make a decision on how they want their future.
Yeah.
Because what's happening in this country, it involves all of us. It involves everyone being conscious and being vocal enough and start talking, you know, speaking against this. Because what Serena did this weekend, what the President Obama did, what Kaepernick did, is doing, these are all issues that involve all of us. And if we don't start fighting against this poison, because it's poison.
Yeah.
When
white people like Tucker Carlson look into the camera and tell millions and millions of white people that diversity is not strength and that this whole idea of diversity is a bad idea, blah, 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 that is so un-American. That is so antithetical to the values of the Enlightenment on which this country was founded. And yes, I realize we had slavery at the founding, but still. I'm sorry, Rudy.
No, it's not even American. It's against humanity. It's against humanity.
Amen.
Humanity.
Amen.
I mean, we are all on this earth together. We all breathe the same air. And for someone to say that, hey, you know, someone is better. I mean, what is so supreme about taking a power and suppressing someone else? I don't get that.
Yeah.
I don't get how someone can say, hey, my gun and my Bible. How can a gun and a Bible?
This is being done out of fear, Rudy. That's what's going on. Fear is the main product that these folks sell. The folks who are encouraging racism.
God speaks against fear. If you believe in God, you should not fear.
Yeah.
And then it blows my mind.
Yeah.
How people say this.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it was Jesus, fear not. Yeah, absolutely. Rudy, very well said. Thank you much for the call. I completely agree with your point and your perspective. James in Lyndale, Texas. Hey, James, what's on your mind today?
Say something else, but I think I'm going to change it now after hearing what Rudy just said. I just don't understand, because you'll sit there on one hand and say, it's all about us, but then as soon as I sit there and tell you I want to own guns, it's like, no, we can't have you in our group. And I just don't get it. I don't care for it. And that's what keeps.
I don't know what you're talking about, James. Can you explain that?
Because it's like you guys sit there and say how accepting you are of everybody else in the
world. Who is you guys, first of all?
I'll tell you, you yourself.
Okay.
You want to be so diverse. You're so diverse in all these people that you're willing to accept. But as soon as I tell you I want to own a gun or I want to own a silencer, oh, you're a cheater. That's what you sit there and call me one day.
What is your wanting to own a gun? First of all, I have no problem with you owning a gun if you're willing to accept responsibility for it. It's not a weapon of war. But that said, what the hell does that have to do with race?
Because the girl who was in California, who was shot by the Mexican. You didn't say he had to be responsible for his gun, but you want me to be responsible.
Oh, come on, James. This is you're doing small bore, you know, nya stuff. You're bigger than that kind of a conversation, James. You really are. Catherine in Burlington, Vermont. Hey, Catherine, what's up? You wanted to get back to Judge Kavanaugh?
Yes, I was hoping you would discuss. You said twice that he's done a lot of evil things. Could you discuss a few of those?
No, I haven't used the word evil to describe Judge Kavanaugh. What I have said is that he in 2004, when he was testifying before the Senate, and in 2006, in both cases, in 2004, he was trying to get a seat on the federal bench in the D.C. Circuit, and they put him on hold. And the hold crossed a congressional election, so they had to have a second hearing in 2006. And in both those hearings, he was asked if when he was in the Bush White House back in 2002, 3, 4, if during those years, I guess it was 2003, there was a whole strategy session that the Democrats in the United States Senate had, hundreds and hundreds of documents. They conducted much of this by email. about how they were going to question judicial nominees, what they had on whom, who, you know, what they thought the Republican strategy was going to be to get their people on the bench. And this guy, Manny Miranda, who was a Republican operative who worked for, I believe, Orrin Hatch. He worked for one of the Republicans on that committee. He stole these documents and handed them off to Brett Kavanaugh.
Oh, wow.
And Kavanaugh involved himself in conversations with these documents, and we now have those emails. They've just come out in the last few days. And, in fact, Pat Leahy put them out last Thursday or last Wednesday during the hearings over the objections of the Republicans. So we now know that not only did Kavanaugh lie in 2004 and in 2006 in order to get himself on the federal court, which could, should actually, in my opinion, lead to his being impeached from that court, but he also lied this time in his response to Leahy. He continued to lie and say, I know nothing about it, even though, even when presented with the emails, actually, I think the emails themselves came out the day after his testimony, so he wasn't actually confronted with it. But the guy's clearly perjured himself, and he was a Republican hack. He was a right-wing hack when he was working in the Bush administration, trying to get more of these hardcore right-wing judges on the court. I think he's a train wreck. I think he's, you know, for our country.
Yes, I do too.
So I'm just very concerned about it, Catherine. And you can, there's some great reporting on this that you can find over at Daily Kos. I think there's a piece on alternate.org. They're all over the web. You can find these things, you know, that are just actually copies of the memos that Kavanaugh was a part of talking about this. Catherine, thank you for the call.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And we'll be back with more of your calls in just a moment. It's 45 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman program. Fair and only slightly unbalanced. And welcome back. Catherine in Penville, New York. Am I saying that right, Catherine? Watching us on YouTube? Catherine? Okay, Catherine, you got to listen to your phone. Whoops, I was going to put her on hold and I dumped her. Catherine, call back. There's a couple of open lines right now. Brian in Portland, listening to on X-Ray FM. Hey, Brian, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. How's it going?
Good. What's up?
Just wanted to kind of point out the fact, something I noticed that was interesting. When Trump found out in the op-ed that something was written from a person inside his cabinet, the individual standing behind him, who were all in support of him and sort of jeering and clapping on, were all national sheriffs, all
right,
brought together to meet with Trump.
Right.
Now, I read a few articles, and it seemed that they sort of omitted the fact that there were sheriffs there that were in support of him. And I just thought it was interesting that we talk a lot about the police state and the apparatus that's going up and the securities and whatnot. It clearly shows you that there's something being done behind the scenes with Trump and sheriffs to kind of drum up that support.
Agreed.
And if martial law is enacted, I feel that there's already things going on. And at what point do we truly sound the alarm and say that this is a banana republic? This is a bought and paid for corporatocracy.
Yeah, and these guys are playing this really slick. I mean, this is the same reason why Scott Walker exempted the police union in Wisconsin when he busted the public unions. And it's why Republicans are always, you know, oh, the police unions, hands off. You know, we hate all unions except the police union. You know, this is one of the big problems. And Brian, I think that your concern is well-founded. When you have the rise of autocrats, they almost always have with them the police state, or they create a police state to go along with them. And it's not a good thing. It's a very dangerous thing. It's a very unhealthy thing. And, you know, we'll just have to see where it goes. Brian, thank you for the call. Alice in Los Angeles watching us on a Roku box. Hey, Alice, what's up on Free Speech TV?
Well, one of the things that bothers me continuously is that the religious right can say whatever they want to say. During Kavanaugh's hearings, one of the senators asked him about his religious faith with the same question that JFK had been asked before, but whether he would be obedient to the Vatican or to the Constitution.
Right.
And Kavanaugh did come back, and I would, of course, say that he would follow the Constitution. But he's a Jesuit product, and one of the famous or infamous teachings of the Jesuits is that you can tell the truth and lie at the same time by mental reservation. Now, all Kavanaugh has to say, and I'm sure he has said it because I watched him during these hearings, was, you know, yes, I agree this, but then he'd put in his own head a but or an and until I get on the Supreme Court.
So is mental reservation a Jesuit version of lies of omission are fine, but lies of commission are a violation?
I think it comes out of that. I'm not sure of that part, but I do think that there are good Jesuits out there that might be listening and might have some method of influencing Kavanaugh to take himself off of the list.
Yeah, yeah, that's very interesting. I had a long talk with a Jesuit priest right after the new Pope came in about this war going on inside the Vatican, you know, it's really quite remarkable. I didn't grow up Catholic, so I don't know the cross currents, but it's fascinating stuff. Alex, thanks for the call. And thanks for watching the show there in Los Angeles on Free Speech TV via Roku. We'll be right back with more of your calls in just a moment. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Just a quick heads up. I've got a piece up on Alternet. I don't have the Alternet title. Hang on just a second. Here it is. It's the NFL's ongoing Kaepernick controversy shows much of white America is still in slave patrol mode. You might want to check it out. Lewis in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, Lewis, thanks for listening to us on SiriusXM. What's up?
Hey, good afternoon. Great subject. Great exchange of conscientious minds.
Thank you.
Are you familiar with the, I think it was an expression that Martin Luther King used in the 60s, conscientious stupidity?
I have heard it. I didn't, but I don't know very much about it, yeah.
Okay, conscientious stupidity looks like these, I wouldn't say exactly white, because they have many Cubans and a few blacks that wish that slavery was still in existence, helping them out as well. If you think about it, these people, they have decided that to make themselves highly stupid. From the lowest common educated one to the highest. I mean, it's nothing to do with intelligence or education anymore. It's like you volunteer to be conscientiously stupid.
Yeah.
And that's what's going on in America. How do you take a man like Donald Trump, who avoided being in the military, and yet all he has to do is put a few Yahoos and hee-haw fans on the stadium calling USA, USA, while they have their health plan, taxation not going to them, and they are making ends meet. And Trump takes off in a helicopter or fancy plane, and they're still saying, yeah, yeah, you told them right, Donald.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's taking away everything they had.
Yeah,
so
it's
conscientious stupidity.
Yeah, it is, Lewis. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. I can't disagree at all. David in San Francisco, listening on AM 960. Hey, David, what's up?
Yeah, hey, Tom. You know, with some of the books that you wrote years ago, it seems to me you did some about, like, William Jennings Bryan and whatnot. And in Montana, weren't they, like, a very colonized state? I think there were super huge mining companies.
They were controlled by the Copper King, who I think his name was William Cooper, but I could be wrong. And he was literally buying senators. I mean, he in fact, when he wanted to become, I may have his name wrong, but the guy who from Montana, he wanted to go to the U.S. Senate. And at that time, this was before the 17th Amendment was passed, so at that time the senators were appointed by the state legislature in Montana. And he went in and he told everybody, if you vote for me, I'll give you a $1,000 bill when you walk out of the chamber. And he stood outside with a pocket full of envelopes with $1,000 bills inside and handed them out to people who voted for him. They sent him to the Senate. The U.S. senators were so offended they refused to seat him, but that only lasted a few months, and then they let him in, and, you know, everything was just continued.
Well, the reason I bring this up, Citizens United apparently got doubled down on. Mnuchin, about a month and a half ago, changed the IRS laws so that they don't even need to track money anymore from another direction. And apparently the state of Montana, because of that history of Montana, state of Montana is suing the IRS because they're denying Montana the ability to track corporate theft. And so if you have any ability to check on this, apparently, you know, it's already taken effect. Mnuchin did this change in a fiduciary way, as opposed to it's a rules change.
Right, I get it. David, if you could find a good summary of that or any good information on that, would you please tweet it to me? I do read my Twitter feed every day.
I don't do Twitter too much. Look for Facebook, though. I'll see if I can shoot it that way.
Okay, if you can get it on our Facebook page. I read that less frequently, but I do read it regularly, and Louise reads it every day, so it'll get to us.
Good deal.
Thanks a lot, David. I'm sorry I don't have the details right at the tip of my tongue, but I've learned from painful experience not to jump into things that you don't know everything about. Bill in Beaverton, Oregon. Hey, Bill, thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hi, thank you. I'm surprised that on the first day of the Kavanaugh hearing, it looked like Condi Rice was sitting directly behind him. And I could be wrong, but it looked like...
She was brought in to replace the young woman who did the white power sign.
Yeah. So, I mean, she represents big oil, and during the Bush administration, they had an oil tanker named after her.
Yep.
And so, you know, I mean, Kavanaugh represents big business and corporations and big oil. So there you have it. I mean, it's a very scary image.
Yeah, this is, we're looking at, you know, basically a corporate takeover of America. It's been ongoing since the 70s, and it's really picking up steam with this administration. Well said, Bill. Thanks a lot for the call. Let's see here. Virginia in Colfax, North Carolina. I hope you're getting ready for the storm.
Yes, I am. Hi, Tom. My name is Virginia, and I watch your show all the time, and I love it.
Thank you.
Mine is a little different. Where did you get your, as a white American, where did you get your fair mindedness from? And did you get, I want to know about your parents, did you get it from your parents?
Me, personally? Absolutely. My parents were extraordinary people. And, you know, just straight out of the lower middle class, but you know, didn't carry the prejudices that are typical with that. Was that the question, Virginia?
Yes, it is,
and that's
what I thought.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. Keep up the good work. I love you.
Thank you, Virginia. It's great to hear from you. Yeah, my mother and father were both, you know, very thoughtful people and taught me not to judge other people. It just, you know, I mean, the lessons my father taught me, I should write a book about. In any case, thanks so much for being with us today. We'll see, you know, keep an eye on this global climate change caused or exacerbated storm. You got abnormally warm water in the Atlantic right now. It's the new normal, but it's abnormal in the historical record. And then the storm is probably going to stall out because the jet stream keeps stalling out because the ice is melting in the Arctic. And brought to you by ExxonMobil and Koch Industries. Anyhow, we'll be back tomorrow. Don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires you. So get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.